Leaders of resistance groups calling for unity among Muslims to support Palestinians in the face of the Israeli aggression. The UN chief calls for a ceasefire in Ukraine during a visit to Russia, while the Russian foreign ministry says Moscow supports diplomatic means to end the conflict. And Russia expels four Swedish diplomats a day after it declared 40 German diplomatic staff in Russia persona non grata. This is World News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank, and that's while the regime's atrocities taking place on a daily basis. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 20-year-old Ahmed Ibrahim Awadat succumbed to his injuries after being shot in the head. The violence happened at a refugee camp near Ariha early this morning. Since March, Israel has intensified crackdown across the occupied territories. Palestinians have also been conducting retaliatory attacks against Israelis. Tensions also have been high in Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Tel Aviv has increased attacks on Palestinian worshippers during the holy months of Ramadan. The daily aggression has drawn strong condemnation from Muslim countries. Now, several prominent religious figures and leaders of resistance movements have addressed people across the world in a virtual conference commemorating International Quds Day. Ziad al-Nakhala, leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, opened the conference, saying that resistance is currently at its height. He stressed that Palestine belongs to Palestinians, no matter how many tyrants join hands with Israel. Hamas political leader Ismail Haniyeh said that Palestinians will deter all projects of division and Judaization. He said that Israel has taken advantage of normalization to go ahead with its plans against the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Said Hassan Nasrallah, said that defending Al-Quds is the responsibility of the entire Islamic world. Then we had Bahrain's top Shiite cleric, Sheikh Isa Qasim, who said that Palestinians are suffering from the most atrocious attacks by the Tel Aviv regime. Also, Yemen's Ansar leader addressed the conference. From Ramallah, let's bring in Saad Nimr. He's a professor of political science with Barzaj University. Good to have you with us, Professor. So we are approaching the International Quds Day. Tell us about the significance of that day. And also, you heard about the comments made by these leaders of resistance front. Let's have your take on their comments and your assessment of the escalating situation these days in the occupied territories.
In reality, we are waiting for this year's Quds Day, because this year we believe that it's going to be really a significant day for Jerusalem, especially after all the atrocities that have been done from the very beginning of Ramadan this year against Al-Aqsa Mosque, against the Jerusalem, against the Palestinians and worshippers who are attending or try to attend Al-Aqsa Mosque, and what happened since the beginning of Ramadan this year, and how many of the martyrs that we have this year. So this year, I think that Al-Quds Day will have such a significant importance regarding what's going on in the situation back in Palestine. Also, we have witnessed around the world so many demonstrations in support of Al-Quds and in support of the Palestinians, whether it was in Germany, in Britain, and even in America. In so many countries, the people do realize and know the atrocities by the Israelis, and that Israel is as a colonial state and as a racist apartheid state is really, you know, they are condemning this kind of a state, and they are asking for a boycott of Israel around the world. The other thing it's about this year was that the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, whether it is the Islamic Jihad or Hamas or the other Palestinian factions, are more ready than any time else. And the Israeli apparently do know that, and that's why they were willing to listen to the resistance after all, especially during the last 10 days of Ramadan, to stop all the incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque and to stop this kind of demonstration, flag demonstration, which is supposed to be to go inside Old Jerusalem, the Old City, and they stopped it because they knew that the resistance are ready. At the same time, we believe that the resistance in South Lebanon is also in a full readiness for any event. And in the speech of Samahat Hassan Nasrallah, he said so, that we are ready this year and never been as much ready as we are today. And we believe that our final battle will be with Israel, that to end this kind of state, and that all the Palestinians, the Lebanese, and even the our also people in Yemen, the Houthis, are also they expressed their concern and their also readiness. So what we are talking about, that this time of year we are talking about the best for the Palestinians, and I think that, and for the region in general, that all powers are ready and all powers are united, and they are having, let me say, one target, to prevent any Israeli aggression against the Palestinian or against Al-Quds. And Al-Quds is a red line, as many of the resistance movement have declared, that it is a red line, and we would never allow Israel to cross this red line. So we think that after all these years of atrocities and all of these years of occupation and the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians and the region in general, I think we have reached this moment that now there is a real threat to Israel, and the Israeli do know that this time of this year, it's totally different from other years, and it is not just as a trap that they could go into any war, whether it's in Gaza or in South Lebanon, and this time it is different totally, and people are ready, to give them a lesson that they would never ever even forget, or even if they still do exist anymore. So we believe that we are in a good situation. Now we are looking forward for next Friday, for Quds Day, to see the world also not only condemnation, but also to stand with the Palestinians and with Al-Quds and with Jerusalem and with the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And we believe that after what happened in the last this days of Ramadan, that this year there will be a huge demonstrations all over the international community, the world, and it will be named after Al-Quds Day, and the standing by of these people with the Palestinian people and with the Al-Aqsa, and to asking for the liberation of Al-Aqsa. And we believe that there is a kind of a huge awakening is coming now after the events that happened in the last few days in Al-Aqsa Mosque, that people are now fed up with the Israeli atrocities, and Israel is getting away with all its aggressions against the Palestinian under the pretension that it's protected by the West and it's protected by especially the Americans, and it is a country above the law. So we believe that this year the world had to, and the people of the world had to, say their word quite clearly and obviously that we are not going to allow this to continue.
Okay, thank you so much. Sadnam, Professor of Political Science with Berzaich University in Ramallah. Now, Russia's military offensive in Ukraine has taken a new casualty, Moscow's ties with Tel Aviv. Israel, which had volunteered for mediating between Ukraine and Russia when the war started, appears to be taking sides now. And Moscow is warning Tel Aviv of the consequences of such partiality.
The Israeli-Russian ties have been deteriorating rapidly over the past few weeks. Most recently, Russia's ambassador to Israel, Anatoly Viktorov, has warned that Moscow will introduce retaliatory measures against Israel in case the Tel Aviv regime supplies Ukraine with military equipment and aid amid the military conflict there. Viktorov issued the warning in a televised interview on Thursday. It was not immediately clear from the Russian envoy's remarks what such a response might entail.
And I think that we'll see strengthening of cooperation and increased military support for Syria and other regional partners of Russia in the region if Israel goes along with supporting Ukraine. And it's important to note that Ukraine has said that it wants to be in Israel. It wants to be Israel in Europe. It doesn't want to be absolutely liberal and European.
The comments came a day after the Israeli Minister for Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, said Israel will provide Ukraine with helmets and flak jackets. Last week, the Russian Foreign Ministry summoned Israeli ambassador to Moscow after Tel Aviv denounced Russia's military operation in Ukraine. It came after the Israeli foreign minister accused Russia of committing war crimes in Ukraine, alleging that there was no justification for Russia's military campaign against its western neighbor. Earlier this month, the Israeli regime voted in favor of a United Nations General Assembly resolution suspending the Russian Federation's membership in the UN Human Rights Council. The move was made over claims of gross and systematic violations and abuses of human rights in Ukraine. The Russian Foreign Ministry called the resolution, quote, unlawful and politically motivated.
Russia says that Israel has taken advantage of the situation surrounding Ukraine to divert public attention from the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, one of the world's oldest unresolved disputes. And that has become especially clear due to the heavy-handed tactics that Israel has recently used against Palestinians while desecrating Al-Aqsa Mosque. Many observers believe it indeed is ironic to hear the accusation of war crimes from Israeli officials who are widely blamed for crimes against the people of Palestine.
Taking a sideswipe at Israel and the United States, the Russian Foreign Ministry has said that the longest occupation in the post-war history is being carried out by Israel with the tacit approval of the West. The ministry further bashed the blockade of the besieged Gaza Strip, which Israel says is needed to prevent arms from reaching the Palestinian resistance movements in the enclave.
Well, one of the things that it's important is that Israel saying that Russia has committed war crimes is laughable, since Israel itself has been liable and the charges are severe to their war crimes and human rights violations against the Palestinian people, most recently in the war on the people of Gaza just last year in 2021.
Ukraine has asked Israel for weapons and equipment, including the Iron Dome missile system, something that Tel Aviv hasn't publicly approved so far. Russia has said that foreign weapons sent to Ukraine will be fair game for its military attacks. If Israel decides to sell arms to Russia's western neighbor, will there be a conflict between the two?
So I think it's not yet sure what's happening, but I think what we are seeing is a shift of Israel from being neutral in this current special military operation to openly supporting Ukraine. So it might shift, but it will cost them. It'll cost them heavily because Russia is an important player in Israel-Palestine.
Since Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a special military operation in Ukraine on February 24 and officially recognized the breakaway regions of Luhansk and Donetsk as two republics, the political lines across the globe have been getting redrawn. As Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has warned, that risks the situation spiraling into a third world war.
I'm moving on. The UN chief calling for a ceasefire in Ukraine during a joint press conference with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Moscow.
But it is my deep conviction that the sooner we end this war, the better for the people of Ukraine, for the people of the Russian Federation, and those far beyond. The United Nations has repeatedly called for ceasefires to protect civilians and to facilitate a political dialogue to reach a solution. So far, that has not been possible.
Now, Guterres says that there is a crisis within a crisis in the besieged Ukrainian city of Mariupol. He called for the evacuation of civilians trapped there and demanded the establishment of a humanitarian contact group. Lavrov said that Moscow is ready to cooperate with the UN to help civilians in Ukraine. He said that Russia's goals are primarily to protect the civilian population. He added that Moscow supports a peaceful resolution to the crisis at the negotiation table.
We'd like to have a negotiated solution, but the way the Ukrainian delegation has so far behaved at the talks is unproductive. The fact that they refuse to acknowledge what they confirmed a week ago is very disappointing. It seems that they aren't very interested in negotiations. Some countries continue to pump Ukraine with weapons, huge amounts of weapons. If this continues, naturally it'll be very hard to reach a solution at the negotiating table.
Lavrov also said that the aim of Russian operation in Ukraine was to counter NATO's expansion and protect the Russian-speaking population. He says that NATO has been using Ukraine to irritate and contain Russia. He also accused Ukraine of violating the Minsk peace agreement. Russia expels four Swedish diplomats in response to the expulsion of three of its diplomatic staff by Stockholm earlier this month. Russian foreign minister says it summoned the Swedish ambassador and strongly protested the expulsion of Russian diplomats. The minister says it also lodged a complaint about Sweden's military support for Kyiv. It accused the Nordic nation of covering up the crimes of those whom it calls Ukrainian nationalists against the civilian population in the Donbass region. The tit-for-tat diplomatic move comes amid rising tensions between Moscow and the West over the war in Ukraine. The U.S., the EU, and their allies have expelled hundreds of Russian diplomats, with Moscow responding in kind. On Monday, Moscow declared 40 German diplomatic staff persona non grata in response to an earlier move by Berlin.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Insight. Good evening and welcome to this episode of Insight. It is 60 years now that the U.S. has imposed economic sanctions on Cuba. We will be discussing this issue and other issues related to Cuba in a conversation with Alberto González Casals, Cuba's ambassador to Iran. But first, this brief analysis.
We recently witnessed the large amount of sanctions that the US and Europe imposed on Russia following its invasion of Ukraine. We're also very familiar with the US and Western sanctions that have been imposed on Iran in the last 43 years following the Islamic Revolution that overthrew the US-backed Pahlavi dictatorship in Iran. However, many forget that this year it will be 60 years that the US has imposed an embargo and economic sanctions on Cuba following the Cuban Revolution that overthrew the US-backed Batista dictatorship in that island nation. If we look at history, we see that the conflict between Cuba and the US did not begin with the Cuban Revolution, but goes back to the beginnings of the United States and the Monroe Doctrine, which declared the Western Hemisphere to be America's sphere of influence or backyard, and that the US would not tolerate foreign powers being present in that region, declaring this mainly to European colonial states which had colonies in the Americas. This was particularly true of the island of Cuba, which was a Spanish colony located less than 100 miles from the US mainland. From the very beginning of the United States, plans for the conquest or purchase of Cuba from Spain were made in various administrations. During the time preceding the American Civil War, Southern slave states made efforts to stoke war with Spain in order to annex Cuba and add it to the list of slave states at a time when new states in the American West were being added to the U.S. territory, most of which were free, non-slave states. Finally, in 1898, the imperialist factions in the US were successful in igniting a war with Spain. Following Spain's defeat, the US formally declared Cuba to be a US protectorate, as well as receiving Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines from Spain. The United States granted Cuba the appearance of independence in 1902, but imposed a constitution on Cuba that gave power over Cuban foreign and economic affairs to the United States, and even gave the US the right to intervene militarily at its own discretion, which it did on numerous occasions, including the occupation of the famous Guantanamo Bay, in which the US maintains a naval base, and which is the notorious site of the illegal detention and torture of hundreds of people that the US has kidnapped in its so-called War on Terror since 2001. This was followed by years of the United States backing the Batista dictatorship, in which Cuba became the center of criminal activities of the American mafia, particularly money laundering, gambling, and prostitution, where the Batista regime was paid off from the profits of these criminal activities in order for the mafia to continue these activities. Following the revolution, the Cuban government, under the leadership of Fidel Castro, sided with the Soviet Union in the Cold War, leading to the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 and Cuba's active involvement in many wars of liberation and decolonization in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, further enraging US leaders. If the US excuse to impose sanctions on Cuba throughout the Cold War was Cuba's backing of the Soviet Union, the continuation of the sanctions after the collapse of the Soviet Union and its continuation until today by every US administration shows that maybe the real reason for the imposition of US sanctions has always been that US elites want to punish Cubans for their independence and to let this serve as a warning to other nations in Latin America and around the world who would want to follow this example. Despite the countless assassinations, coup d'etats, and dirty tricks that the United States conducted throughout the world, it has, for 60 years, miserably failed to overthrow the Cuban Revolution, and Cubans have been able to reach high levels of human development and are now among the most advanced nations in medicine and biotechnology, and among the few nations who successfully developed their own line of COVID vaccines despite these sanctions, which deprive Cuba of its largest natural market for its products and services. Given the rapidly changing global environment and the powerful non-Western and anti-US alliances that are forming in the 21st century, it might become easier for Cuba to exist as an independent, revolutionary nation in the next 60 years, in a future where it will matter less if the US imposes or does not impose sanctions on a nation, even a nation that is located so close to the United States.
Ambassador Casals, thank you very much for joining us on Insight. As you know, the program tries to look at the issues from a historic and strategic perspective. We have taken the occasion of the 60 years of U.S. sanctions on Cuba to have a conversation with you today about the history of Cuba, about the different things that are happening there in Cuba and in the region in Latin America, but also Cuba's relations with Iran. And we would like to ask you to please share some of your insight into these matters. And before we get to the historic issues, let's start talking about the sanctions. So, as you know, Iran has been sanctioned for 43 years. We were, until very recently, the world champions of American sanctions. This is now, this honor has now been given to the Russians. They are now starting to get it. But the country that has been the most sanctioned in history is Cuba, for 60 years. Some might say that it is not worth the trouble for the independence. Some countries want to be independent. They are willing to accept sanctions. Some countries, no, they don't care. They will do what the Americans say and get all the different consumer products that they think the people want. So I would like to ask you in this way. Is it worth it to suffer under the sanctions and have independence? Or is it better to do what the Americans say and have all the consumer products that you want?
Yes, of course. Thank you so much, my friend, to having me in your program, and thank you so much to Press TV, to all your teams, for this opportunity to address to the audience, to the Press TV. Regarding the sanction, as you said, of course, Cuba, we have the number one sanction from the United States. Only in the last period of this person's named Trump in the United States, they got only 244 measures against Cuba, sanctions against Cuba. They get the worst situation for Cuba and the worsening in this moment. We don't have difference now in this moment with the Biden administrations that's supposed to be as another kind of administration. They will change something in Cuba or regarding Cuba or toward Cuba, but nothing changed by the moment. We said more or less that it could be in the same situation we have. And the people of Cuba are suffering, of course, and our economy is suffering in a very hard situations because of the sanctions. There is no any sector, there is no any situations regarding Cuba that is not affected by the sanctions from the United States. Not even no family, no person, even living in Cuba or living overseas, is not affected by the sanctions. All of us are affected one way to another one by the sanctions. Mainly, and the more hard and sensitive, is regarding the medicines and the sector of medicines and the health sector, of course, and affected most a lot. Personally, I have my own experience that one family of mine died because of we cannot get in the proper way one medicines from the lab from the United States. They denied, due to the law of the embargo, to facilitate these medicines to the Cuban people. And so my personal way, I need to suffer a loss from in my family. And like me, many people in Cuba, we have many situations regarding the health sector, the food sector, I mean agricultural sector, because anything is under sanctions on Cuba. Even if you import any kind of goods that have at least 10%, only 10%, building in America, this is under sanction for these situations. And as you said, but we have 60 years in these conditions, and it's getting run, and we will continue in that situation if they don't want. It's not Cuba who blocked the United States. It's not Cuba who affects the economy of the United States. It's not Cuba who make a sanction to the United States and nobody in the United States. So it's not in our size, the solutions. They need to get conscious about it and to get, this is all politics, this is obsolete politics, this is illegal politics that they toward to us. Of course, the sanction from the United States isn't only because of the United States. It's because of there is some people too, or some countries that support the United States in many ways. So the United States not only can't put the sanctions because it could be almost impossible regarding the economy, a global economy, but in the people follow the conditions from the sanctions in the United States, of course, affect to us in the same way. We will continue, of course. It's more important for us, the moral that we have in front of the world. We are a hope. We resist, and we will continue to resist. We have 60 years. We will have 60 years more. If they want to continue to do it, it's their own problem. They affected, too, not only the Cuban people. They affected, too, the American people. They prohibit, even against your own law, prohibit the American to visit Cuba. Cuba is the only country, by law in the United States, that they cannot visit. Even they could visit, American could visit any place that they could be dangerous, and pay place like war or something like that. But Cuba only 90 miles from the coast of the United States, they cannot visit Cuba.
A lot of families.
At least legally point of view. And the point of view of the family, too. They affect to the family, the Cuban family that living in the United States and the Cuban family. They divide the families of the Cuban family there. And they don't take care about that. They have emptied their embassy in Havana. We still have the relationship. We promote the normal relationship between Cuba and the government of the United States. But even they quit the consulate. The American consulate in Havana is practically not working in this moment. So the Cuban people need to go to so far like Guyana or some another place to obtain the consular, consular topics and consular procedures to get to the United States and to get the visa. After that, staying there in Guyana, in many ways, they deny the visa for the Cuban who went there. And so the Cuban people, sometimes they get illegally entered into the United States. They promote the legal way to get migrations to the United States. They broke the talks that we have in migration topics that it affected in this kind of way. And later than that, they condemn us because the people want to go to the United States due to the situations in Cuba. So they block us. They make a sanction to our economy. They don't allow the normal people to make the consular affair. They make a lot of things against Cuba and the Cuban people. Then they decide this is an internal problem. So it's not because of that. It's because of it is the American that they consider that they are the police in the world, and they not consider to have in the proper way the normal behavior of the neighbor. We want a normal relationship with the United States, but not under conditions and with all respect to our sovereignty. And answer your question, of course, we will continue to resist until this moment.
Well, it's very interesting, Mr. Ambassador, because you raised the issue of having normal relations like any other neighbor. But if we look at history, America has never had normal relations with its neighbors, and particularly with Cuba. Because you talk about America being police. Long before it wanted to be the police of the world, it was the police of Cuba and Latin America and Central America. Just for our viewers who might not be familiar with the history, let's talk a little bit about the history. If you look at the history, we see that Cuba, unlike many other countries in Latin America, remained a Spanish colony longer than a lot of other countries. And it had very stronger ties with Spain than some of the other countries. And it was after the Spanish-American War that, although there were independence movements in Cuba in the 19th century, actual independence occurred after the Spanish-American War, which was the end of the 19th century. And immediately America turns Cuba into a protectorate.
Yes.
It forced a constitution onto Cuba that gave the America a right to intervene into Cuba whenever it wanted to, like in Panama. Also later on when they separated Panama from Colombia. And also, Guantanamo Bay occupies till today occupying Guantanamo Bay with all the crimes and all the torture and all the illegal detention that's going on there, and also controlling the foreign policy and the economic policy of Cuba.
Yes.
In the first half of the 20th century. So, please explain for our viewers, those who are not familiar with the history, who might not be from Latin America. The history is not simply that, you know, the government in Cuba is communist and the Americans are capitalist. It is actually an imperialist struggle. It is even if Cuba was not communist, the Americans would be doing the same thing. Yes. So if you could please explain a little bit the history of what's going on with America.
Yes, of course. Let me tell you first that the independence of Cuba from a long time ago, from the 18th, 19th centuries, is a very hard situation regarding Cuba. We pay a high cost for our independence, not only now from the Americans and now from the time for the colonialism from the Spain at that moment. Cuba was the last colonial country that separated from Spain at that moment after the very hard fight for our independence group to fight against the Spaniard Dutch, and at that moment, at the end of the 19th century. Later than that, this kind of ability of the American to try to control the area, and they intervene in Cuba, and they get an agreement with the Spaniard without the conditions and without the knowledge and of the Cuban sites, of independence Cuban sites. So, as you're telling me, and you are very well known the Cuban history, we have later than that a series of different kind of series of the program agreement and these kind of things that get Cuba in under interventions and in a very hard boot of the American. Yes. in many ways regarding this situation of the agreement for naval base and carboneras in Cuba that allowed the most well-known Guantanamo base in Cuba, that is illegal territory occupied by the United States, that at that moment, and they continue to say that they pay for us this space of land that they cover, very important bait, Guantanamo bait. You know how much they pay for that, or they put in the paper that they need to pay for this land? $8. $8. $8 yearly. It's a lack of respect to the people of Cuba. It's a lack of respect to the land. It's a lack of sovereignty in this kind of way. And they try to get the promotions from the base in several ways to provoke the authorities in Cuba in order to create some details about it. And later than that, you send detention center for supposed, and they don't want to use it in this kind of way. Later, they want to make a lab there, a very weird lab that nobody knows that they will put it there. And they continue with the base. Even the military people, the military sector in United States, they explain many times publicly that they don't need the base in Cuba. Right. And despite that, they continue to keep in the base in Cuba. And this is the way that they want to promote this kind of things. And political during this period was very hard for us because we suffered, I mean, the population in Cuba suffered several governments linking to the United States. Cuban government, but linking to the United States government. So it's not independent. So it's we need to fight a lot. We fight, well, finally with the guerrilla of the commandant-in-chief Fidel Castro. Thanks, you have here the pictures, and I really appreciate that. And of course, until the triumph of the revolutions in 1959. Let me tell you, from the beginning of the triumph of the revolutions, the United States began to put sanctions against Cuba. There is a memorandum that maybe you need to study and the people need to know very well of the state subsecretary at that moment, Lester Mallory, at that moment, April 1960, that issued the policy toward Cuba. That including, very clear they put in English that. We need to put the people on Cuba suffering because Fidel Castro didn't have any oppositions and people on that. So we need to put pressure on Cuba economically, made the people hungry, made the people difficulties with salary and everything in order to overthrow Castro.
Exactly the same thing they are saying about Iran.
Exactly.
Exactly the same thing.
Is they repeat the history about it, and this is the policy, real policy of the United States toward many countries in the world. This is really unbelievable. This is disgusting. Even they appear in the public papers that they consider this kind of politics in these moments. So they promote any kind of politics from that moment. We receive a lot of attacks, economically attacks, biotechnology attacks, affecting our land, affecting our animals, affecting everything in order to promote and to have the people hungry and these kind of things. They want to submit our people by force, and that's that they cannot do it in this moment, and they cannot. We have a little approach. The government of Obama have another mentality at that moment, and I try to, we get a little approach. We open the embassies at that moment, but later than that, as you could see, I remember Che Guevara expressions that he said, we cannot even at that moment, the beginning of the revolution, we cannot trust in the imperialism and in the United States in this small way like this. We cannot trust on that. Iran, it's a lot of betrayed in many ways recently now. The nuclear agreement, that Mr. Trump disappeared the agreement and something that it could be good for everybody.
The interesting thing is, Mr. Ambassador, the interesting thing is that, okay, so Obama administration comes, does some certain policies with Cuba, with Iran, with other countries, goes to Russia, resets all these policies. Okay, so Trump comes and does his thing.
Why is Biden administration not continuing? Biden was the vice president of Obama. Why is it? This is the problem, because people say, oh, the Democrats are good, the Republicans are bad. No, all of them.
Yes, of course.
So this is a problem. The Biden administration is continuing the policy of Trump.
The same sanctions. No change. We don't expect nothing from Biden administrations. And let's go to see.
With his excuse, they said there was an attack and the hearing of the diplomats and these kind of stories.
They create several history in this way and try to get in against Cuba and like Iran very hard. That's what we call mediatic terrorism. And they try to promote mediatic terrorism from different kind of ways. That's why it is so important our channels, our medias, try always to put the reality and the truth under the table in order that people try to know. Because they are so strong, no doubt, so strong in mediatic point of view. And they create these kind of things, that some problem with your attacks again. That's stupid in several ways. And they know that they cannot make a proof about that. Until this moment, they don't present a proof about that. But nobody take care. They put the lead of the opinion one time, and later than that, they don't say nothing else.
Because, you know, it's interesting. In America, everybody knows that whoever wants to become president, they have to win Florida. Because of the presidential system in America, the Electoral College, it's not one person, one vote. It's it's the states. And Florida is an important state. And exactly. Cubans in the U.S. who are anti the Cuban government have a very prominent role in southern Florida.
Some analytic people always speak that the foreign policies of the United States toward Cuba is not foreign policies, it's internal policies. Exactly. It's because they want always regarding their election process in the
exactly, because it seems that those people who, for whatever reason, have a problem with...
Yes.
It might be even personal and family.
Yes, exactly.
They are keeping hostage the real national interest of America.
Yes, it's a small group. Let me tell you, it's a small group. Very powerful. They have a lot of money and a lot of conditions, economic point of view, and they make a lot of influence in the Congress and in the government in the United States. But it's proof on the survey that the Cuban people in Miami, Cuban people in Florida, they want a normal relationship with our country. It's the normal way to do it. But some of this kind of people, a small group, very right people, in the right sides, they have hijacking the policies toward
it. Seems the younger generation, the second generation Cubans that are in that area...
Yes, it's coming another kind of generation. Of course. In the United States, we have big amount. Taking account the populations in Cuba, we are 11 million. We have around 2 million people living in America, in the United States, and mainly of them in Florida, of course. And they have a lot of influence. But the majority of the people, big majority of the people, they immigrate to the United States because of economic reasons. Right. Cuba is a poor country, no doubt. It's a third country, no doubt. We have a lot of problems in the point of view of the economic. And many people are normal. It's, how to say it, it's human people sometimes want to immigrate to another country. But to use these immigrations in the political point of view is the wrong things and the really bad things.
Exactly. Okay, Mr. Ambassador, before we go to maybe our main subject, which is Iran-Cuba relations,
yes.
I want to ask two more questions. One is that, or I want to continue with what we were saying. I think maybe we can summarize this part of our discussion as it relates to America and Cuba, that America basically wants to punish Cuba because it doesn't like to have independent countries as its neighbors. It wants to punish Cuba because it's an independent country and it gives hope to other countries.
Yes.
In Latin America, Cuba was very prominent during the Cold War in liberation movements, very famously in Angola, in many other countries, also Latin America. So I think maybe we can say it this way.
Yes.
It is in America's national interest to have good relations with Cuba, but it is the policy is held hostage. And on the other hand, you have this old imperialist view among the American elites that cannot handle the fact that you have a country which is their neighbor, very close neighbor, being independent and not doing what they say. So if you could please summarize this part of
this. Yes, let me tell you, I'd have a reference, and many people have publicly, people and high-level people in the United States, they said the problem with Cuba is personal. This is something crazy. And you could say that's something. How is possible politicians could say this is a personal problem against one country? We are talking 11 million people. We are not talking about nothing. We are not talking about neighbors house to house. We are talking about neighbors countries.
And Fidel Castro is no longer here. So why?
Yes, that's why that show you exactly. The real intention of them. Exactly. They want to annex Cuba to the United States.
They actually wanted to.
That's the dreams of the many people yes. in America. And when you go and you talk to many people there, and some people that are confusing, and the other one not. But they said the Cuba belongs to the United States. Cuba belongs. Not to be a small island. How is possible more than 60 years small island could stand up in front of the big power of the United States? So they don't could analyze that, and they don't accept it in this way. During the period of Obama and another kind of period, a lot of Americans goes to Cuba as a visit, as a tourism, and they could prove the reality exactly. in that one. That I consider that it could happen with the Iran too. If the people come here and they could see in the proper way the hospitality of the Iranian people, the great things of the Iranian people, the potential of this country, please, this is not confusion on that. That's why they promote and create problems. They know very well our countries. They don't want that.
Anybody who has visited both Cuba and Iran,
yes,
whether they're American, Western, whoever, mm-hmm. is exactly this happens to them. They come here.
Yes.
And they see that all the propaganda and all the lies is completely different than what the reality
yes,
is.
Yes, that's the point.
Exactly.
And I suppose one time the truth will come in out. The truth will tell about our countries. That is an unbelievable. We are under very hard war. This is mediated war, our country, in many ways. Technologically, you use the techno in order to produce bad things and to overthrow our governments. In both countries and overthrows the conditions inside our countries.
Thank you for joining us. Until the next time on Insight.
In the limelight.
April 25th happened to be the 42nd anniversary of the miracle in the desert of Tabas in east-central Iran that dashed all American hopes of superiority when the great Satan tried to launch a surprise attack on the nascent Islamic Republic through a well-planned operation codenamed Eagle Claw. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading, The American Eagle Permanently Declawed. Here's the story. The forces of oppression, tyranny, atheism, polytheism, and all other vices that are opposed to the one and only Creator and the principle of divine justice are a vanishing lot, and sooner or later will be a thing of the past, as was the case with the all evil powers. The U.S. regime claims to be world's paramount military power, equipped with the largest number of nuclear weapons. It boasts of being the number one economy. It brags about its mastery of science and technology that enables it to explore outer space and control cyberspace. It gulls over its media stranglehold. And yet it is a helpless and impotent entity destined to be doomed, especially when it dares to confront those that are divinely blessed. April 25th happened to be the 42nd anniversary of the miracle in the desert of Tabas in east-central Iran that dashed all American hopes of superiority when the great Satan tried to launch a surprise attack on the nascent Islamic Republic through a well-planned operation codenamed Eagle Claw. In the dead of night, while the unsuspecting Iranian people were asleep with complete trust in the protective power of God Almighty, in obedience to whom they had staged the Islamic Revolution to overthrow the British-installed Pahlavi regime and kick out the American hegemons from their sacred soil, President Jimmy Carter made the self-destructive move to try to reclaim control of Iran through the highly trained Delta Force. A total of 8 U.S. Navy RH-53D helicopters took off from the aircraft carrier Nimitz, which was positioned in the Arabian Sea and were joined by 6 C-130 Hercules aircraft that had been stationed at a military base in Oman to land on a remote airstrip some 350 kilometers from Tehran for the final swoop on the Iranian capital to capture or kill the Iranian leadership with the help of some turncoats and free the 52 detained American spies. God Almighty is the best of planners, and he decided to show a glimpse of his science when he decreed particles of sand to rise as high as 10,000 feet in the air in the form of a dense white cloud, swirling, whirling, and twirling around an airborne U.S. invasion force to reduce machines to wreckage and their crew to charred bodies. Thus, April 25th is a Thanksgiving day for Iran and the Iranian people. Today, when the U.S. is suffering all sorts of defeats throughout the world, we are indeed grateful to the Almighty for preserving the power and prestige of the Islamic Republic. We thank God for helping us to achieve peace, stability, honor, dignity, independence, self-sufficiency, industrial progress, scientific breakthrough, technological development, and above all, the moral and ethical advancement in Iran. We also express our gratitude in the Divine Court for having inspired the people in the region and beyond to assert their independence and strive for the welfare of their respective nations, as well as the collective dignity of Islam and Muslims, as is evident by the developments of the past 4 decades. Examples galore, such as infusing of the spirit of Intifada in the Palestinian people, the rise of the legendary anti-terrorist movement Hezbollah in Lebanon, the victory of the people of Syria over the most macabrely murderous terrorist, the establishment of independent Iraq, the emergence of the popular Ansarullah movement in Yemen, the awakening of the long-oppressed people of Bahrain, and last but not the least, the resurgence of the Nigerian people led by Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Many more freedom movements are in the embryonic stage and will definitely triumph in the near future, thanks to divine assistance in the permanent decline of the American eagle and, consequently, the impending doom awaiting all other vultures preying on oppressed people.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kHz for Southern Africa and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.